Good evening to everybody. Thank you for tuning in to third in our series of Shiurim on Tfilah. As we discussed in the first few weeks, we've talked about the Tfilos and Tfilah in general serving as a way to connect with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. We spoke about the organization and the series of Tfilos of Shachas and Minchas Maariv in terms of the standardized Tfilos and how standardized Tfilos affect our ability to connect to Hashem. This evening, I want to talk in general about the power of Tfilah, Koach HaTfilah, and the ability that we have to connect to our Creator, to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a really, really deep, meaningful, and passionate and powerful way, and try to understand the depth of our Tfilah and how far our Tfilah can go, how far-reaching our Tfilahs are, and if we dig deep and really have the necessary Kavana and use all the tools that we're given for Tfilah, we have a tremendous gift and tremendous potential within our reach. In his classic work, Sharim B'Tfilah, Rav Shimshon Pinkus, in his Pirkei Psicha, notes that there are two aspects that Tfilah works in terms of the potential for Tfilah and for our Tfilah specifically to be answered. The first is that the individual needs something, requires something, as we've spoken about. There are sechusim that a person has, there are merits that a person has, and there are chobos that a person has. There are lack thereof merits that an individual has. However, often it's not enough just through one's sechus, or the opposite, through one's negativity or negative chova that a person has, that the ability and the sense that a person has to receive that which is necessary works. However, it's through tefillah specifically that a person has the ability to reach his or her desire. So even though an individual can have a tremendous amount of chos, or the opposite, a person has a tremendous amount of chobos, that in and of itself is not enough to receive or not receive something, but tefillah specifically has to be engendered, and one has to daven in order to receive the tefillah. So even though a person doesn't have the chos in that self, or if a person does have the chos, nonetheless, there still has to be a sense of tefillah. That's point number one. However, not only is it that somebody who doesn't have a schus has the potential to have the tefillos answered, there's another point, and that is even if a person has all the schus in the world, a person can be the biggest tzaddik, nonetheless, the only way to be the recipient of God's bounty is dafka through tefillah. So even though I could do 24/7, all everything you're supposed to, from right, left, in between, benodim l'makom, benodim l'chaveru, nonetheless, their vehicle of tefillah, and the sense of the ability of a tefillah allows one to reach his or her desired wish. I'd like to show you, and Pinkus brings one proof to this, how this works and why this is the case. And many of the Mefarshim quote a Rashi, but Pinkus brings this Rashi as well, and it's found in the end of creation. In Sefer Bereishis and Parshas Bereishis, after God creates the world in 7 days, in the beginning of chapter 2 of Perek Beis, the pasuk reads as follows: "V'chol siyah hasada terem yihye ba'aret, v'chol esev hasada terem yitzmach." Prior to plant life and vegetation being able to grow, ki lo himtir Hashem elokim al ha'aret, God still did not allow rain to penetrate the ground and for the vegetation and the plant life to actually grow. The Adam ayin la'avodas ha'adama, and there was no man in the world to work and to toil with the ground. So even after day three, when all of the plant life and vegetation and the plants were created, nonetheless, was very clear in the pasuk that even after day seven, after Shabbos, nonetheless, all the plant life, all the vegetation was just standing still. And Rashi, commenting on this pasuk, notes that the world stood still until day six. Pesach ha-karka under Yom HaShishi, all plant life, all vegetation stood still until day six. Asks Rashi Valama, why did no plants grow up until day six? Kilo himtir, it didn't rain. Asks Rashi umatam lo himtir, why did it not rain? And Rashi quotes the end of the pasuk, and that's the juxtaposition between the beginning of the pasuk, the end of the pasuk. There was no man to be ove the Adama And Rashi, and quoting the Gemara Chumash Daf Samech, understands that La'avodas Adama has these simple textual definitions, not that there's nobody to toil the actual seeds and the ground, but rather there's nobody to serve Hashem. Avodah Shabalev Zohi Tfilah, until Adam came, V'yada Shehem Tzorech L'olam, until Adam Rishon came and recognized that there was a necessity in the world for vegetation and specifically for rain, his spala the lamb. Adam Rishon got up and started diving. The yardu v'tzamchu ha'ilanos v'edesham. And at that moment, rain fell and vegetation and plants and the flowers began to bloom. Grass started to grow. And that's what the pasuk is teaching us, that the ground did not allow itself to be successful and the vegetation was unable to grow. Fruits, plants, vegetables were not growing in the earth up until Adam Harishon actually davened. What's very clear from here, and this is what the Gemara teaches, and this is what Rashi quotes, is that even though we had all the right and all of the ability, and the world was being created in such a way that once there's plants, and once there's plant life, and once there's fruits and vegetables, and bushes, and trees, and everything that we have in terms of that level of creation, nonetheless, it was still unable to sprout and to grow and to be used up until Adam HaRishon actually davened. Clearly, with all the schusim that the world had, and nobody sinned, and Adam HaRishon didn't sin, and nobody sinned, the world is in its perfect, pristine place. Nonetheless, what you see clearly is that you need tefillah, and the only way for tefillah to work, the only way to reach our desired goal is dafka through tefillah. However, that's all that tefillah is. There's something else as well. In Parshas Vayera, right immediately before the discussion and the story of the Kedah Yitzhak, we read about another sad story, the story of Hagar Yishmael being banished from the house of Avram Avinu. And Rashi notes that there was a dialogue, a communication, conversation that took place between the Malachim and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Yishmael was left to die, and he was dying of thirst in the middle of the Midbar, and Hashem wanted to save his life. And the Malachim came along and the Katrigan Ramam Ribona Shalom. How can it be that you're going to save and allow this Yishmael to live? Later, his descendants are going to come and are going to destroy the Jewish people. They're going to take advantage of the Jewish people. They're going to create and wreak a tremendous amount of havoc. How could it be that you're going to allow these descendants, and specifically this man called Yishmael, live? Hashem responds and he says, look at him now. Is he a good boy? Is he a bad boy? Rasha or tzaddik? And the Malachim responded, he's a tzaddik. He's okay. And therefore God responded, you know what? L'simaisav shel achshav anudanu. We're going to judge Yishmael based upon the moment, and therefore I am going to allow him to live. But the question is, how could HaKadosh Baruch Hu just look at the moment? Why would God not look to the future? That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ability to do so. And doesn't Hashem recognize and realize all the trouble and the difficulties that the descendants of Yishmael are going to bring to the Jewish people, to the land of Israel? How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu keep Yishmael alive? It's true, maybe he, at that moment, was doing what he's supposed to do. But nonetheless, why? How can Hashem not look to the future and prevent all the terrible travesty that's going to take place to the Jewish people in the future? If you read the pasuk says, "Vayishma Elohim el kol hanar." God heard the cry of the lad. "Vayikra malach Elohim el agam min hashemayim v'yomala." And as soon as God heard the call of the nar of Yishmael, at that moment the malach called down to Hagar. The mother of Yishmael told her, Malach Hagar, what are you so concerned about? Al tirai, don't be afraid. Your son Yishmael is not going to die of thirst. Ki sham Elohim el kol hanar ba'asher hu sham. God has heard the cry, the tear, and specifically here Rashi says it's talking to Tfilas Chola, the cries and the tears, and the prayer of a sick person. And in the Sefer B'nei Chai, he explains that the reason that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is willing to forego and to almost blind Kaviyachol, the future, and just look at Yishmael for that moment, because Yishmael called that in tears, Yishmael called that in prayer, Yishmael cried and he davened. The Koach HaTfilah is so awesome that it has the ability to take somebody whose descendants are going to be Rishayim, who are going to take advantage and to murder and to destroy Jewish life, and nonetheless, Hashem still says, but he's crying out to me, he's being disfollow, he's creating a relationship with me, I can't turn that down. That's the power of tefillah. So even though an individual might be very worthy of tefillah, the likes of Adam HaRishon, still has to daven. Even though a person might be very wicked like Yishmael, But if the person's going to daven, nonetheless, the tefillah is still going to work. Tefillah has to be generated, and it's a treasure grove that we have in order to recognize the sense and the ability that we have to reach our desired goal. There are many psukim that indicate this as well. Of course, Bnei Yisrael, as they're leaving Mitzrayim, the pasuk says, "Vayishma Elohim el na'akasam." God heard their na'akasam, their prayers, their tefillos, their calling out. Well, why did the Bnei Yisrael have to daven? Didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Avram Avinu many, many hundred years ago in Brisbane and Mitzrayim that Bnei Yisrael will leave Mitzrayim? Why are Bnei Yisrael crying? Of course they were going to get out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Avram. The answer is there has to be tefillah. Without tefillah, with the tzchus and all the promises, it doesn't make a difference. Regardless, there still has to be mispalah. The same thing is true in the life of Yitzchak, as the pasuk says, V'yeater lo Hashem. The Yitzchak cried out, V'yeater lo Hashem. He cried out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, why do you have to cry out to Hashem? We all knew that Avram Avinu promised that the bris Avram is going to be transmitted to Yitzchak and not to Yishmael and not to Esau, but it's going to remain through Avram, through Yitzchak and Yaakov. So why indeed was Yitzchak crying out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? We already knew that there was a promise. The answer again is that we know for sure that without davening, without calling out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all the good ideas and all the thoughts and all the promises nonetheless need to be generated through a tefillah. Like anything in life that is a guarantee, there's nothing that's a guarantee. We always have to go through the motions. Our children could be signed up in a school, our seats can be set, but nonetheless, you still have to go through the process. Every step of the way, whether it's a bureaucratic process or not a bureaucratic process, there has to be some level of affecting and concretizing a process, even though it's been set up before. That's true in Olam Hazeh, and it's true in the Olam HaTzilah as well, that we have to go through a process, and the process that's been ordained, that's been created, is called tefillah. So if you're great and you're tzaddik, you still have to go through tefillah. You still have to go and use that vehicle to garner HaKadosh Baruch Hu's bounty. And the same thing is true with the Rasha. Rasha as well, vice versa, can affect and can change the outcome of the Rasha through tefillah as well. And the Sefer Afike Yehuda, which are drashos, he asks a very, very interesting question. Drush Dalit. He asks, how is it that tefillah works to change a Gzar Din? How could an evil decree change? How don't we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't change? Hashem doesn't change a bit. We all know that. That's one of the foundations of our belief. Yirgim Olikarim. Zosa Torah Enam Achlefes. The Torah doesn't change, and of course God doesn't change. So but how does our tefillah work? And how could it be that our tefillah can change in Gzar Din of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Whatever is Nigzar and Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu set, decreed, and ordained is going to take place. How can our tefillah affect the ideas and the stamp kaviyachol of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Explains the Sefer Afike Yehuda that when God ordained an evil decree on a person, he only decreed it on that person. However, if that individual changes himself or herself through tefillah, that gzeira no longer is on that person because that person is recreated. That person is a new individual. The gzeira was on Reuven. But if Reuven davens and Reuven changes himself, so he's no longer the same Reuven that he was 2 days earlier, or a week earlier, or 5 days earlier, or 6 months ago. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the gzeira on that person. But the person who davens, the person who is sincere and is devotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and recognizes that through tefillah he's a different individual, at that moment the gzeira is no longer applicable to the new person. Rather, because the person has changed so much, ha'adam be'asmo mishtane, the person himself changes, says Afik Yehuda, rak as sheyeches b'tfilah zu lehiskabel, at that moment, only once the person changes himself or herself as a result of calling out the Kadosh Baruch Hu in tefillah, that's when the tefillah will be answered. But the earlier gzeira, it's no longer the same person. What emerges from the Afik Yehuda is a very important point in Jewish philosophy and a very important point in tefillah in general. The difficulty that many have when it comes to tefillah is when our tefillahs aren't answered. We cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu something, we don't see an answer. We don't recognize, and we don't see that Hashem actually answered. What emerges from the Afik Yehuda is that tefillah can't just be a statement or a plea that happens by rote. Tefillah has to allow a human being to become different. And if a person is the same person when he davened before and after he davened, then the gzeira still exists. I'm not a changed person. So the gzeira on Reuven is the same gzeira on Reuven. But if through tefillah a person is able to become better and to engage in a deeper relationship with Hashem and correct his or her ways, at that point, the person is so different that no longer can that gzeira exist. Of course, we don't want to suggest that the reason tefillos aren't answered is because the person didn't necessarily change. But nonetheless, it leaves a major insight and impact into what tefillah is. It's not just opening up a siddur, a book, and a tehillim just reading words. That's only a means in toward an end. The end is that we have to become better people, greater people, elevated people by our tefillah, by our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we're no longer the same person. As the Rambam says in Hilchos Tshuva, Eini Oso Ish, I'm not the same person, I'm different. And when I'm different, so the gzeira that HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the decree that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had against that individual is no longer the same. This question can't just be left by itself. We also have to try to understand how is it that Hashem doesn't listen to tefillah. So yes, we may want based upon that Afik Yehuda, but allow me to share a different insight into the power of tears and the power of tefillah in general. There was a great tzaddik in the last generation, his name is Rabbi Aryeh Levine. Aryeh Levine was a famous Jerusalem scholar. He was a person of incredible, incredible compassion, and he was a person whose brachos was sought after by many, many throughout Yerushalayim, throughout Eretz Yisrael, and certainly throughout the world at large. I had the opportunity to meet him numerous times. He used to come to the Kosel every Motzei Shabbos, one after Shabbos left. He was a very warm, compassionate, pious person. There was a time when a widowed woman came to him and expressed her difficulties and her challenges and said to Rabbi, please, Rabbi, I will accept all your words of consolation, all of your divrei nechama, but on one condition. Tell me, what happened to all my tears? Where did my tefillos go? I prayed, I davened for my late husband, chapter and chapter after tefillah. I shed thousands of tears. My very soul flowed into those tears. Were those tears wasted? That was the question that this woman asked Rabbi Levine. Gently, Rabbi replied that to this woman, after 120 years, when you leave this world and you ascend to the heavenly tribunal, you will see how meaningful and precious your tears were. You will discover that God himself gathered them in and counted every single teardrop and treasured it like a priceless gem. And you will note, so in any time a harsh and evil decree came about the Jewish people, your family, one of those tears came along and washed away the decree that took place. One sincere tear, that in and of itself is a nechama. The woman was so inspired and so moved by the comment and the response of Rabbi Levine that often she came back and asked Rabbi Aryeh to repeat again and again what he said. So a tear, a tefillah, is never wasted. There's no such thing. Sometimes we don't necessarily see how our tefillos work and how our tefillos are effective. But clearly what is a truth is that our tefillos are listened, our tefillos are kept, our tears are held in abeyance, kaviyachol, if we don't see that we're answered, and at the right time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses those tefillos maybe for something that we don't even recognize, whether it's another refuah that's needed in a family, whether it's a refuah for Klal Yisrael in general, whether it's a tear at the tefillah that has impact on a community, on a family, or on all Klal Yisrael, no tear and no tefillah is ever wasted. Indeed, sometimes Hashem has to say no, even though we don't understand. No different than a parent who tells a child that sometimes I can't give you what you want, and you're not deserving necessarily of the prize. But of course, it's done with compassion and with a lot of love. As we find ourselves in Chodesh Elul, we say daily, twice daily, the chapter Chavav, Parak 27 of Tehillim, with David Hashem Orivi Ishi. And in the last statement, and in the last pasuk of the David Hashem, David HaMelech says, Kaveh Hashem Chazak V'yamit Vudacha V'kaveh Hashem. Hope to you, Hashem, strengthen yourself, and Hashem will give you courage and hope to Hashem. And the Farshim, the Rishonim, ask that the pasuk says, Kaveh Hashem, that you should hope to God, strengthen yourself, V'kaveh El Hashem. Ask the Mefarshim, what's the reason that Kaveh Hashem is repeated a second time? We already said Kaveh Hashem Chazak Yamit Zudacha. So why are we saying Kaveh Hashem a second time? The Radak and other Rishonim explain that sometimes a person anticipates a positive event, a change in his or her life, and it doesn't materialize. And you don't see that your tefillah was answered. So that individual, that person, shouldn't be discouraged. It's the opposite. The person should daven and hope to Kadosh Baruch Hu a second time. Therefore, the pasuk says, Kaveh Hashem, again, that a second time I have to reach out and I have to beseech HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't give up hope. just because you didn't see your tefillah answered. But adarabba, try again and try again and try again. Kaveh al Hashem. That's one pshat that the Mefarshim offer. There's a second pshat that the Mefarshim offer as well. That Kaveh al Hashem a second time, even if your tefillah was answered, and you did see success, and you did see bounty, and you did see all the brachos and the treasures that you wished to be responded to, were responded to, don't give up then. Kaveh al Hashem, continue to call out to Hashem. Thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Reach out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and answer and tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu how thankful you are for everything that happened. The koach HaTfilah, the power of tefillah, is awesome. It's true both individually, it's true collectively, it's true for us, for our families, it's true for Klal Yisrael. We need tefillah. There's no other vehicle that works in order to get what we need, in order to create that kashrut with HaKadosh Baruch Hu designed for tefillah. It's a necessity, and without it, there's nothing else. Not Torah, not Chesed, all are important. Talmud, Torah, Keneged, Kulam. But nonetheless, the way God created and set up the world is that this cause called Tefillah is the only way that our Tefillah can get answered. If it's true for Yishmael, whose descendants were going to create terrible, terrible disaster for the Jewish people, and his Tefillah was changed, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu listened to him, Basher Husham, and if Adam Arishon was worthy of Tefillah, and worthy of all vegetation and plant life to be grown. But without tefillah, it didn't get responded. We see how powerful, how strong tefillah is. And even though we don't necessarily see that our tefillahs are answered, we should recognize that our tefillahs are answered, and the tears and the tefillahs are kept and are held for the right time and the appropriate time. And even if we are answered or if we're not answered, nonetheless, Kaveh al Hashem, call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu again. As we prepare and get closer to Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Yom Adin, we have to recognize the koach HaTfilah, the beautiful opportunity that we have in front of us, the added davening, the added tzlichos, the added opportunity to reach out, to call out to Kadosh Baruch Hu, should dig down and recognize the treasure that is in front of us and the ability that we have to create that union with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, to have our tzlichos answered. Kadosh Baruch Hu should answer our tzlichos, and Hashem should help all of us individually and all of us collectively and Klal Yisrael. Have a wonderful evening.